Dude, you buy 20 copies next time you're in New York. I will take you out for a cocktail, whoever you are out there, you know. This is my new dating strategy.
It's time for The Profitability Show. Inspiring conversations with successful business leaders, artists, and entrepreneurs that will get your blood pumping and your creative juices flowing. We'll focus on the latest and the greatest tools, techniques, strategies, and advice you can apply right now to achieve more success and improve your bottom line, no matter what business you're in. The Profitability Show, the business podcast that brings you less jargon and more margin. With your host, digital product strategist and innovator, Nick Knight.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Profitability Show for Season 2, Episode 1. We're back with a vengeance. My name is Nick Knight, and today's special guest is Jill Schiffelbein, also known as the Dynamic Communicator. She creates and executes communication strategies that help organizations increase sales, enhance their product experience, and retain customers. Now, she's a video partner and contributor to Entrepreneur Magazine, as well as a live stream video personality, so you may have seen her around. You may have also seen her popular YouTube series, Impromptu Guru, a series of 52 60-second long videos aimed to help you improve your communication and public speaking in under a minute. Her newest book, Dynamic Communication: Strategies to Grow, Manage, and Lead Your Business, is now available from Entrepreneur Press. She's a very good friend and member of our exclusive mastermind group, where I get to regularly benefit from her expertise. But today, I share her with you. Very excited to welcome to the show the Dynamic Communicator, Jill Schiffelbein.
Thanks for having me, Nick. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, it's been so long since we talked. I think it's been 3 or 4 days since we...
Yeah, a lifetime, a complete lifetime.
So as I mentioned, Jill is part of part of our mastermind group. And it's been fantastic to kind of have her brain at my ready whenever I need help. And she's very helpful. So Jill, you've got so much going on. So, I mean, in the past 2 years that we've known each other, I mean, it's just been crazy. You know, the stuff is just like leaps and bounds forward for you. And so I'm super impressed and very happy to have you on the show.
Well, it's been a crazy 2 years. And it's very cool when you have a mastermind group. And anyone who is in business for themselves and doesn't have one, by all means, go out and find one and get one. But it's so cool to see, in the course of a year with this more longevity approach, people, what changes, what takes off, what doesn't, and how can you help support each other along the way?
Yeah, you've really had some interesting stuff that you've been able to share with us just because of, you know, you've tried a lot of different things all in the same kind of area, and you just kind of say, well, this thing's taken off and that kind of pushed you this direction. And then, well, now this thing's taken off and that pushed you. So in the course that I've known you, you've gone from, you know, having your own business as a speaker and a consultant and, you were an author before, but now you've turned into basically a live stream personality. You're hooked up with Entrepreneur Magazine and Entrepreneur Press. You've got a new book coming out. I mean, it's just been really jumping forward. I want to before we get to that, I want to go back in time a little bit because I know a little bit about your history. I don't know all the details, and I think it's fascinating just to hear somebody's kind of climbing the ladder to where they are. So you started out; you were already doing really well from Arizona. Am I correct? Is that where you started?
Yeah.
So yeah. Originally, small town Kansas. So I got to get the whole story because the jumps later seem bigger if I say I'm from a small town in Kansas. You know, just a small town girl living in the lonely world.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so you went from Kansas to Arizona, where you were. You wrote a communications textbook that was used in colleges. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was Business and Professional Communication in the Global Workplace, I think is the overly academic title there. But yeah, wow. I taught business communication for 11 years at Arizona State University. And in 2009, I think it was, that textbook came out, and it was surreal. It was like, you're like, wait, this book, that actually is me. And I put words in that book. It was a little surreal.
So the weird meta moment was, were you actually an instructor teaching from your own textbook?
I was.
Oh, no. That's awesome.
You know, I was.
Gonna argue with you when you're the actual author of the textbook.
Oh, they're going to argue about how much do we have to pay? Why do we need to buy this? I'm like, listen, guys, I can buy a cup of Starbucks coffee for the royalties I make off of each and every textbook. Yes, it is a crime, but no, I can't do anything to control it. You know, this is a system.
That's right. That's awesome. So now, so you're a teacher And I mean, that seems like somebody's kind of hit a place where they should be pretty happy. That looks really good on the resume. It's good for you getting engagements as a speaker because you're obviously an authority in your area. What, tell us about how like you decided I need to shift gears or I need to go in a different direction.
You know, here's the deal with, for me in the academic world, I never went into college thinking I'm going to be a professor. That was never the goal. But while I was in school, I learned that I knew I wanted to study communication and public speaking and that type of thing, but I didn't know how much I would love studying the strategy involved with business. So I got to university, started taking classes. I mean, they make you do those general electives for a reason because you discover things that interest you. And I really got into the business side of it, and especially management strategy, organizational theory, organizational psychology, that type of thing. And I found that I really liked studying that. And so after I was done with my BA, I thought, I'll probably do some work, maybe like a trainer in an organization or something, because that makes sense. But I got into graduate school, and because of a shortage at that point in time, they had over enrollment in public speaking. Well, by the time I was 22, I had spoken to an audience of 5,000 people before and multiple, like hundreds of audiences. And they said, you know what? You're going to teach. So I got my first class at the age of 22 teaching public speaking to students who were pretty much my age.
Wow.
And it was a very interesting experience, but that made me fall in love with teaching. I didn't know that teaching was, you know, really in my blood and educating. Very long story short, stayed in the university, started playing with technology, developed hundreds and hundreds of online courses, started teaching with technology in a different way. But for me, it was after within my first year of running a major online education office at the university, bringing in a million additional tuition dollars in a single year.
Wow, no kidding.
They said, no, you can't be promoted. We don't do this. We don't do that because you don't have PhD behind your name. And that was the first big smack in the face. I had had consulting clients on the side since I started teaching at 22. I got my first client then. But when they said, because you don't have letters behind your name, we are not going to promote you any further. So at the age of 26, I hit a glass ceiling, or not even a glass, a brick ceiling at the university. And this is what they were telling me. Wow. So once I heard that, it was very easy for me, who had been consulting on the side already, to say, listen, this was never my long-term path anyway. I am going to go be entrepreneurial for myself.
Wow. That's, I didn't know that part of the story. That's really interesting. So yeah. So now you're in that situation and you're already a consultant, you're already teaching people about public speaking. How did you know where to shift gears or where to apply your energy now that you're going to leave the university?
You know, once I made the plan, to be honest, that conversation happened and it was a smack in the face. It's like, no matter how much money you've brought us in, we think you're worthless because you don't have these letters behind your name. I'm like, well, alrighty then, I'm going to stop bringing in money because you're still going to pay me no matter what, which is a lesson for anyone running a business. You want to demoralize your employees, then by all means, tell them there's no room for advancement. Because what I did is I looked at the calendar and it said in 18 months, I was 100% vested in my retirement plan, which was a 25 grand bonus matched on top of something else. And I said, well, I'm going to be starting a business. Why don't I just roll this easy job out? Because now it was a piece of cake for me. I'll sit here for 18 months, plan my business strategy on the back end and collect the extra money in case something happens down the line. And so that's what I did. And unfortunately, there's people all over corporate America, universities who are doing the same thing because of poor treatment and, you know, stifling of ideas. So when I did that, I knew that I had been consulting with an executive VP at Charles Schwab. That was my first client ever. It was the coolest thing to think, oh my gosh. And then when I first started out, I was charging and I was so proud of myself at $75 an hour, right? I mean, I look at myself now, I'm like, oh my God, you actually did that? Like, yes, I did.
Wow, who books that gig?
I know, right? I would be working all the time and making no money if that were the case. But you know, 22-year-old Jill thought $75 an hour is an amazing amount of money.
Hey, you know, it's exciting to get a paycheck doing what you think you're good at. You know what I mean? So
it is. And it's a gift, really. And yeah. So then I learned that, okay, I can do this. Then it transitioned into me doing corporate training for his team. And I said, okay, well, I can do this. I can teach communication in a different way. And since public speaking is something that so many people are fearful of, and I know I have a gift to teach that to others. And now that I know the business communication stuff too, I can just contextualize it better. It makes sense for me to start out there because I know that if I say I'm a public speaking and presentation coach, people know what that means. So that's where I decided to start.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, so when you took that next leap, is that Impromptu Guru or is that much later?
No, Impromptu Guru was the first business. So June 2011 is when I cut the paycheck cord and started the business officially, even though unofficially I'd been, you know, picking up a client here or there.
Great. And so so the quick backstory that I know is that you had this great idea, which as it turns out was a really great idea. And I think there's a little hiccup in what you thought it was going to do to what it really did. But the fact of the matter is you had this idea that, you know what, I'm going to teach a 1 minute video on communication skills and have 50, so it's one per week. So for a year, you got a whole year's worth of kind of training, 1 minute a week type thing. And you did it as a YouTube series, which is still available. What was the original plan with that? I know we'll talk about what it did, but what was the original idea behind that? What was your market or what was your strategy?
You know, my original idea behind it, I had started in June 2011. I filmed this series in July 2012, so a little over a year. Like my first year out of the gate, I was able to make more on my own than I did having a full-time salary at a university, which was like the first, yeah, I'm good, you know, moment. And not that it was filthy rich or anything, but I felt dang proud of it. And then the next thing was, okay, I know I'm good at this, because you have to have the confidence. And I think that's anybody's secret in business who is successful. They really truly have the confidence. And it's not just this an arrogant thing that comes off, but in their core, they know it's good. So yeah. In my core, I knew then, and I still know now, that public speaking and teaching it and helping others improve at that is truly something that I am gifted at. So what I did was I thought, I'm getting clients this way, but I'm not experiencing this widespread fame that I'd like. So how can I do that most natural to my content? Not what was sexy at the time, but what's natural to my content. And for me, public speaking, presentation skills, media appearances, video was the obvious fit. So I had done a lot of local marketing, chambers of commerce, speaking at events, content, blog posts, that type of thing. But in 2012, I created this 52 video series that in just 1 minute, one time a week, you too can improve your communication and presentation skills. And I think I did it just like that. Oh, so embarrassing.
No, I was watching and preparing for this podcast and I was like, yeah, you're so charming. And it came out so well. It's like, you know, I think they're a win.
You know, it was good. And the idea was what I know from being in education and building literally hundreds of online courses is that people learn in sound bites. People learn in small chunks. So let me make these 1 minute videos. I design them as a marketing campaign where I'm thinking I'll drip one out a week and people will be excited. They'll subscribe. They'll want to get engaged. They'll be excited to see these videos. And by the end of it, of course, I'm going to be famous, right? I'm going to be this YouTube star and I'm going to have business all over, people knocking down my doors. But then I thought, oh my God, but wait, there's more, Nick, but wait, there's more. I thought people aren't going to want to wait another week for the video. So then I built this whole e-commerce structure around it on my website. And to this day, I have sold four digital downloads of this series.
Yeah, it's hard to sell something when it's free on YouTube.
It is.
There's a challenge there. Okay, so but that was the vision. So you only sold four of the digital downloads, obviously, but the videos took on a life of their own. And I don't know, was there a point at like week 36 or something or was there a specific video that then people went, well, I got to go back and look at all the rest? Like, tell us about that, because I think there's a lot of listeners that would love to figure out a way in their market to kind of find that, you know, that communication system where they're reaching out to the people that are interested in their type of content, whether you're a plumber or whether you're a singer, whatever that is, but using that same kind of an idea, like what was the expectation? What was the thing that actually made it click?
Well, I mean, the expectation was I was going to become rich and famous, right? Isn't that why anyone posts on YouTube? But that has not happened yet. I'm still holding out some hope. But I got through the end of this first year, right? I got through the end of this first year. These 52 videos were out there and I had accumulated 60,000 views. And I know a ton of people who would be pretty thrilled if their YouTube channel had 60,000 views. Yeah. But I was pissed, to be quite frank. And the reason why is because in business, and this is what I found to be true across the board for me. So it's one, it may not be my most profitable secret here, but I think it's a secret for everyone, is that anytime I invest in an idea with my time, it's one thing. But when it's my time and money, it is completely different. So if I had just invested with my time, if I hadn't spent $5,000 on, I'm so transparent with numbers, so ask me anything about it, but $5,000 on getting the studio for a full day, shooting 70 videos in a single day, which is a freak of nature. I'm weird like that, you know, hair, makeup, lunch for the staff, bringing donuts and doing, having an editor and having an extra producer on hand.
Change of costumes.
Right? I noticed change of costumes.
Yes. And change of costumes, right? Like, well, there's five themes in the series. So I had five different outfits. It just made sense, you know, from a girl perspective.
Right.
Anyway, so I did all that. So I invested $5,000. And at the end of the year, I had not recouped that. And so I'm pissed. And so I'm thinking, okay, I can either do one of two things. A, either just give up on it like I do on other ideas, like my blog hadn't really gotten any traction. So I kind of said, screw that. I'm not going to mess around with it. Mm-hmm. Or I could dive in and learn everything I could about the medium that I chose to use, which was video. And I'm a geek behind the scenes, which is why we're good friends, Nick, right? We like the techie stuff. We like the data stuff. And I dove behind the scenes of YouTube, learned everything I could, changed a handful of things up within 90 days from September 2013 when that last video hit at 60,000 views. 90 days later, I had 90,000 views, a 50% increase by some drastic changes. And now I'm sitting at, I think it's like close to, it's over 750,000 views and started getting some cool things that I know we'll get into.
All right. So you just glossed over something and I don't know if you charge extra for that, but I want to just back up just a little bit there. So you went in and learned a bunch of cool ninja stuff on YouTube and then you applied that and then you got half as many more views in, what'd you say, in 90 days or in a month or something like that? So give us a one or two of those little nuggets that
it will cost you $1 million now. $1 million. So what I did was learning behind the scenes, and I want to put a, you know, a little star asterisk dot dot dash dash bullet. When I did this, I was ahead of the curve of doing this at the time. Now I think it's more par for the course. So you wouldn't expect to see the same level of results, but I do promise you, I've worked with, I think probably 24 people on their channels individually. And only one person I've worked with has not seen at least a 15% increase in 90 days by applying these.
Nice.
So, and sometimes it's been a lot more drastic than that. So here's some of the key things I changed. I changed how I wrote my titles. I changed how I wrote my descriptions. I put what I call a universal description in each and every video. And
so,
then,
so let me interrupt real quick. So that's as if somebody landed on video 27 and it's their first one. So that becomes their kind of jumping off point, right? Is that the idea? Like that's where the intro, so that they're being indoctrinated into the series at any point rather than feeling like they came in the middle. Is that what the idea?
Well, for me, it wasn't about the series at all. It was about how are people searching and how is YouTube referring me? So if you want to really get big on YouTube in terms of understanding keywords and search engine optimization and all of that stuff, there's a couple things you need to know. Number one is this: people do not search by keywords anymore. Keywords is an old word. How do people search? How do I do this? Where do I go for this? How can I find this? How do I become a better whatever?
This is Jill talking into her mobile phone for those of you not watching the video of this.
Oh yeah, sorry. We're on video. So yeah, so this mobile phone, this sexy device with this pretty screen that matches the color of my eyes. Oh, you can't see that either if you're on if you're audio. Man, you're missing out. Google me now. No, just totally joking. But with this, it's we ask questions.
Yeah.
Now for me, I was ahead of the curve, I think, in that for searching in 2013 when I changed everything and I put all my titles in the form of questions. Wow. So I'm kind of like pat myself on the back for that a little bit, but I also realized then how people were searching was changing. And so for example, from 2014 to 2015, the number of searches that started with the words how to increased by 70% on search engines. So we are fundamentally searching differently and it's not just enough anymore to place communication skills, business communication, whatever. We have to be able to serve people by answering specific questions because when people have questions, they want answers. And if you're a person who helps them answer their own question, you have empowered them and they're not going to forget that. And so that's really the secret.
Well, that's really great. You know what I see as an extension of that strategy, which is really brilliant, is that it, by asking the question as the title, you've already chunked down the video to be a bite-sized, not because you're answering a question instead of a rambling, you know, here's a whole half hour on whatever. Instead, it's how do I do this? Here's how you do this. And you can get that answer across in a minute or 2 minutes. And, you know, and that's where you get the consumption rate to go up because, you know, as soon as they see it's a 29-minute video, they just go pass. I don't have time for that now.
Yeah. And then in YouTube world, here's the other thing I did. So I did those things and, you know, to your listeners out there, this page is still up. It's a landing page I did for a conference a while ago, but you can still get it. There's a PDF handout, 10 variables to YouTube success. The three that I talked about plus seven others are on there for you with links to other resources. And if you go to bit.ly/NSA15, all in lowercase. So bit.ly/NSA15, all in lowercase. You can, you know, put in your email and you get this PDF download that explains all those things. So for those of you struggling in YouTubeville right now, go do it. It's a free resource. Grab it. It's cool. But what else changed? And this is important for anyone to know. And this is marketing now on Facebook or any type of online marketing is the owners of the site want people to stay on their site longer. And so what I did was I looked at back to September 2013 when I'm doing all this analysis, my videos had like an 85% retention rate, which is unheard of in YouTube world, right? Pretty much unheard of. But let's even say for ease of math here, 80%. 80% of 60 seconds is what? 48 seconds. So that means although my videos are greatly watched, they're only on YouTube for 48 seconds. Whereas if I would, let's say, combine 5 1-minute videos together, now have 300 seconds and they stayed for 50% of the time, that's 150 seconds that they're on the page and YouTube likes that a little better. Now, there's some magic number, some ratio, some percentage, whatever, that no mortal knows unless you are the one who created that code for YouTube. Mm-hmm. But what I also found was when I did those retitlings and then I also put 5 1-minute videos together to create about a 5-minute video, that one video has over 300,000 views now. Because what happens is when people are watching videos on your channel, YouTube will suggest you as a channel more. When people are watching a certain video, YouTube will suggest that video more because they know on average that they're going to get people on the site for at least 2.5 more minutes. So it's a safe bet if you're already watching a video on business communication presentation that they can refer you Jill's video because they're going to keep you on the site longer before you click off. And the two huge metrics you want to look to, and I know this conversation is probably going in a different way now, Nick, than you intended, but you know, like drop the knowledge bombs here. It's you want to look at two metrics. If you go into your video manager under your analytics to your traffic sources, you want to see YouTube search and YouTube suggested video at the top of those traffic sources, because that what that means is that one, when people are typing in questions or keywords or searching, that your video is actually relevant, and number two, it means that they're staying on YouTube site longer. So the more you can do that, and that does require accurate descriptions with accurate questions, keywording, etc., but it also means providing quality content. You combine all those together, and that's how I had a video that I initially titled Do the Penguin, changed that video title, which had at the end of my first year, I think like 200 views, changed it to How to Calm Your Nerves Before Public Speaking, : Do the Penguin. And now it's like 10,000 views.
That's fantastic. And I noticed that when I went to your YouTube landing page, your YouTube channel, which is, what's your YouTube channel? Is it Dynamic Jill or?
I wish it was. So this is the other caution. By all means, when you actually get to a point where you have 100 subscribers, YouTube lets you pick a custom URL. Mm-hmm. I thought Impromptu Guru was going to be my brand forever, but you know what? It spoke to a B2B or a B2C audience, but not a B2B audience. And I rebranded. Mm-hmm. Always, 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 unless you are so confident in your brand, use your name. Because I would kill to be able to say youtube.com/dynamicjill, but it's youtube.com/impromptuguru.
Okay, so that's where I was. And what I noticed was that the welcome video that's always, you know, the kind of the premiere video when you land on someone's channel, it's the one that just automatically starts playing for you. And yours started playing, and it was the Impromptu Guru series, but you had glued a whole bunch of those together as one video. Now, what was interesting about that was I didn't know that. So when I got there, I was watching one and I'm going, okay, this is really good. And I know it's, you know, going to be a minute long or whatever. And then as soon as it ended, it started to play the next one. I thought, oh, okay. And this is all just stuff that's going on in the background of my mind. I'm thinking, oh, this is a playlist. She's got a playlist here. Okay. So then I watched the next one. And I ended up watching like four of them, I think. And then I was like going, how are these just playing one right after the other? Like, this isn't a playlist. And I like hovered over it and I saw the scrub bar and I'm like, it's like halfway through one video. And I'm like, oh my gosh, she like married all these together. And it's brilliant. The reason I bring it up is because if it would have been just the one, like if you would have just featured one of the 1 minute videos, I would have been done after 1 minute. I got what I needed after the first minute, but you were interesting and captivating. And I was like, you know what? It kept playing. And then you say, how do you do blah, 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 blah. I'm going to show you. And then I'm like, okay, I'll stick around for that. And then that one ended and I'm like getting ready to go off and like, now how do you, you know, and I'm like, okay, I'll stick around for that one too. So, you know, it really worked. It worked on me, you know, and I was doing research for this episode, but it was just because it was interesting. And if it wasn't put in my face, you know, so I thought that was a really interesting strategy.
Thanks. Well, and I think, you know, for anyone who's looking for a YouTube hack right now, so let's say you were like me and thought these short videos are great. And for learning, they are. They are proven effective for learning. But for YouTube algorithms, they're not as perfect. But let's say you have a couple 1 or 2 minute videos. They just don't fit together well. Like my videos, they flow together well. It's pretty easy, but maybe yours don't. All you have to do is take that video, now record a new intro and a new outro, or add one additional story or one additional piece of context, and boom, your video's repurposed and you haven't really worked that hard at creating new stuff on top of it.
Oh, good idea. I love it. Well, cool. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Big Apple. That's a big part of your life, and we're going to find out a little bit about that. Then we're going to talk a little later about your new book coming out, which I know you have it in your hand. Does that mean it's already available or coming soon?
Well, this is the official copy I got here, but on March 14th, 2017. So I don't know when this will air, but hopefully it'll already be out in stores.
Okay. March 14th. Awesome. We're looking forward to that. All right, cool. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with Jill Schiffelbein.
Are you looking to learn business strategies from some of the top experts in the world? Or are you looking to earn income as a leading expert yourself? At Revisit, we empower leaders, innovators, and experts to create online learning products that get better over time. Interactive learning products on Revisit remain live connected to the creators, who can add or update the content instantly, offer direct access and feedback, exclusive communities, and even special discounts and offers. Our unique app-based solution means the products you buy or create will remain exclusive and valuable in the hands of paying customers only. So, start learning or start earning at Revisit.com. That's Revizit.com.
And we're back with Jill Schiffelbein, my good friend and mastermind partner, who has some exciting news coming out next month. Her new book, which is going to be unbelievable, as you can tell by this episode so far. It's just tons and tons of knowledge, all about communication skills and how to improve, whether you're on stage or in front of the screen. She's the person to get that information from, and now it's all in a nice handy book, so can't beat that. Jill, I wanted to talk real quick about New York City, because I remember this was sort of a major shift for you now. So I think we established earlier, you did the Impromptu Guru series first, correct? And then tell us about like what happened that made you go, you know what, I got to be in New York now. And tell us about the goals you set for yourself to accomplish that.
So what was really interesting is, so as this YouTube thing was starting to take steam, it still wasn't getting me the media opportunities I had hoped. It still wasn't, you know, making me famous. And I say that, you know, semi-sarcastically, like, yeah, I do want to achieve a certain level of fame in my life. I am not shy about saying that, because I think with a certain level of fame comes a certain level of influenceability. And that to me is really important to move forward with social issues that I'm very, you know, very hold close to my heart. So when I am looking at what I had built in Arizona, there were a couple of things that really happened. Is one, the media opportunities were not there as much. And number two, I had just a series of really life-changing health situations, the C word among other things. And I just felt so stagnated. And I felt that I was kind of being held back because my dreams were too big, or I was too greedy, or I was too confident, or whatever it was, you know? And of course, that's your community. And it taught me a huge lesson on people I surround myself with too. But I thought, you know what? I came back from a conference in New York. I came back and my best friend, Stephanie in Arizona, said, you know, your energy is just so different when you come back from there. You should move there. And I said, well, I don't have a job. And she looked at me deadpan across the table and said, "You are the dumbest smart person I know. You don't have a job here either. You have a business. Why can't you have a business there?" Oh, you know, it's like this light bulb. Thank you for calling me an idiot. Now I'm having a good idea. It was crazy. And so, very long story short, had to take care of one more health issue, woke up from surgery, found out it was all good. The next day I booked a plane ticket, and 60 days later I lived in New York City, and I moved here thinking that, oh my gosh, I am going from spending, you know, $1,100 a month in a mortgage for an 1,800 square foot house to almost $4,000 a month for like 400 square feet. Oh my God, this is crazy, but I got to be willing to risk it all. If I believe in myself and where I'm ready to go, this is what I can do. So what I did, that retirement account I referenced earlier that I sucked it up and stayed around for, I looked at that thing, divided it by 12, and said, if the worst case happens and I move to the city and make no headway and don't bring in a single cent, this is what I could afford to live on if everything else failed. My save, right. You know, everything else failed. So I picked a dang nice building in a dang expensive neighborhood where I felt safe to put myself in the best possible position. And my goal, you know, literally the first year was not to touch that retirement account. And 2.5 years later, it's fully intact and it just keeps growing.
Nice. Well, that's inspiring to say the least, but it's also, you know, ballsy. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, my wife is from Hungary, and, you know, she, you know, when she was very young, when she was, I think, 20 or something, just basically said, "I'm moving to America. Love America. Bye." And she moved to New York as well. And, it, you know, and she didn't even speak English for the most part. So, you know, but I'm always kind of impressed with people who can just, you know, pull up root and do the thing that they're passionate about, and kind of figure it out as you go. Like, you know, you didn't have it all laid out, but you were determined and you made it happen. And so that's really inspiring. So now, so you've gone to New York now, and what would somebody do in that situation? What happens now? So you land there, you're in the city now. You kind of have the same situation you had in Arizona. So you still have your YouTube series or whatever. How did you start to materialize opportunity in New York?
You know, what's really interesting is the YouTube series. I know we're dropping hints now because a big reveal is coming later. Dun, 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 you know, with all of that. But I wasn't really making a lot of money off of it. I figured out how to repurpose those videos and upsell the training and consulting clients later, which made me pay it over tenfold. Great. But I moved to New York not knowing anyone here. And everyone's like, "You have to know someone in New York." No one that I had in my phone at all. And so I moved here thinking, okay, where am I going to go? Where am I going to land? And what on earth am I going to do? So I did the same thing that I did in Arizona when I started my business. I looked up local chamber of commerce. I looked up local networking groups. And quite frankly, quickly found out that those weren't the people. Those were the same type of people for the most part that I was interacting with in Arizona that were not playing at the level I wanted to play at. I moved to New York to put myself in a situation where I could always be the stupidest person in the room.
Yeah.
And I craved that because I was always the one, this sounds pompous, but I think a lot of people can identify with this. Once you reach a point in a certain group where you're always the one giving advice, you're never the one receiving advice. Yep. That's when it's time to move on and get a new group. It doesn't mean that those people aren't amazing people who you love and treasure and will have as lifelong friends, because they absolutely are. But it's where you've reached a point where you have developed outside of where that rest of the people in the group have developed, because they're just a different person in life. And it's not bad or good. It's family. Having kids was more important. You know, I'm single. I don't have kids. I have a very different lifestyle. Mm-hmm. You know, if I had a significant other, great. I mean, that would be fantastic. And I'm sure my business would look a little different, but you adapt accordingly. So I wanted to put myself in a city where it forced me to thrive. I mean, in Arizona, as a single person, you can live on very, very, very little money. Here, you can't at all. And so you are forcing yourself right out the gate to just push past where you think you're capable of. And then for me, it was, how can I get in the door and meet people who are playing at a level that I aspire to? And then not only getting on the door, but how do I get them to give me their time, which is the craziest part about it.
Wow. So that's, I mean, for me, it's just, it's so impressive that you were able to do this. And then, you know, I know you got involved with the National Speaker Association. You're very highly respected in that organization now. In fact, I think you're going to be the chairperson of their big annual conference in 2018, correct?
Yes.
So, I mean, yeah, so, so yeah, but I mean, you know, that's, I mean, that's the thing that's so great about you is that, you know, you don't, you seem fearless. You just keep moving forward. You keep plowing forward and, you know, and you leave a wake of very happy people in your path. You know, that they're happy they met you. They're happy they learned from you. So, I mean, it's just really great. So I want to know now about Entrepreneur Magazine, because that is like, now we're starting to reach up for some brass rings. And that, I remember when you first started to kind of engage with them and you were so giddy excited, you know, and we were in our mastermind groups and stuff. And now it's really turned into something where you're kind of one of their go-to people. So tell us, how did that relationship even start? How did you show up on their radar? And tell us like where you're at now.
You know, what's really interesting is when people think, you know, I want to pitch stuff to media or I want to be a contributor somewhere, and they just will send pitches ad nauseum with very little result in most cases. And the same had been true to me. What's amazing is when you create something so valuable that's getting recognized by others at a level where people come to you. And so we go back to this whole YouTube series thing, and what happens on YouTube, it's really interesting. When you get, you know, about 250,000 views on a channel, multi-level marketing, media, people, companies, things, some slimy, some not, reach out to you and are like, hey, we want to work with you. We'll take over part of your channel and share ad revenue and you'll get more exposure and we'll get money too. And it'll be this yay, win-win. And none of that ever sat right with me. Mm-hmm. And so one day I get this email from a thing called Entrepreneur Network. I'm like, oh, just another one of them. Click delete. Well, the next day I'm on Twitter and I see this thing Entrepreneur Network mentioned again. I'm like, okay, I've never seen any of these companies mentioned anywhere else, much less on my Twitter feed, right? So I'm like, I'm going to look them up. So I look up Entrepreneur Network, do the things. I see they're owned by Entrepreneur Media. I Google them more. I'm like, oh, crap. That is the conglomerate that owns Entrepreneur Magazine, Entrepreneur.com, Entrepreneur Press, the book publishing arm, and now they were launching a brand new video network called Entrepreneur Network. And so frantically, I'm like, oh, you know what? And I'm going back to my email. Please, Gmail, do not have purged this yet. Do not have purged this. And thank goodness the email was still there. And they had reached out and said, listen, we love your YouTube content. We know that entrepreneurs will resonate with it. Everyone needs communication presentation skills. Can we talk about partnering? And I became one of the first partners on their new video network.
That is so unbelievable. So again, we go back to the importance of that day when you sat down and said, you know what, I'm going to do this YouTube series. You have no idea how that's going to change your life. You might have had a plan in place that didn't happen, and you might have even felt defeated. But at the end of the day, look what this has done to really change your life. You know, it's pretty amazing.
It is. And what I, you know, the real pivotal moment, not just the idea of the creation of the series, but that idea a year later when it's like, listen, I've invested this time and money. Again, if I invest money, I always see it through. That's just kind of what my motivating factor is. But I need to figure out a way to make this work for me. And it took from the time I launched my first video in September 2012 to when they contacted me in, I think it was January 2015. Like, you're looking at what, 2.5, 3 years until things actually started happening. And now I'm at the point, you know, fast forward to now March, almost more February, you know, we're right on the cusp. Spring 2017, which is 4.5 years from the launch of that first video. I now have 750,000 views, a syndication deal with Entrepreneur Network. I became a columnist on entrepreneur.com. I'm now a live stream video personality and my book is being published by them. And I've contracted with them to do other paid projects too. Now I have content everywhere that will back up my expertise, and you have to have that expertise and confidence. But if I had never chosen video as a medium from the beginning to get my expertise out, this never would have happened. And I'm just, it's amazed. And for me, you give me a foot in the door and I will pry that thing open forever. I mean, tenacity is not something that I lack in those situations. And when they came with me to the video network, they said, it's probably not going to yield you any profit, you know, for at least the first couple quarters. And I said, well, you want to use my content for free? And they're like, yeah. I said, well, yes, if within the next 14 days, 10 business days, 2 weeks, you get me a sit-down meeting with the head of editorial at entrepreneur.com, because I knew he was in New York. I did my research and they said, okay. And the rest is history from there.
That is so great. And I remember about a week ago, cracking open my latest issue of Entrepreneur Magazine and bang, there's a big full page ad for your new book in Entrepreneur Magazine. And I just about fell over.
It's it's still a pinch me moment. I'm like, is this, it is real. And, you know, because now I live in New York where I'm surrounded by people and I'm fortunate to have in my network New York Times bestsellers and people who are kicking my butt left and right in the world. Right. So I look at it, I'm like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. No, it is a big flipping deal. Like I have an ad, a full page ad that I have to pay for, even better, in a major magazine. Like this is cool stuff.
It's way cool. Because, you know, there's a lot, I mean, you know, to be quite honest, there's, I have quite a few friends. I wish I was one of them, sadly, that could claim this, but I have quite a few friends that are, you know, publishing articles on various major, Entrepreneur and Wall Street Journal and Huffington Post, and, you know, and it's impressive. Every time I see one of their Forbes or whatever, you know, and they pop up their thing and it's on, wow, I'm on Forbes.com and I'm reading my buddy's, you know, article. It's fantastic. You know, so that's impressive in and of itself. But the fact that you are, you know, like I'm cracking open the printed magazine that I've been reading for 10 plus years, you know, and there you are. There's something cool about having it printed on the page that you can frame. I love it.
It's a little surreal, I won't lie.
Yes. So we've been hinting around about this new book of yours quite a bit. Let's move to that because I think we're all ready now to find out more about Dynamic Communication 27 Strategies to Grow, Lead, and Manage Your Business by Jill Schiffelbein, coming out next month, or actually coming out in, 2 weeks at your local bookstores. It's a real book, not an ebook. It's not a mirage, and it's not a YouTube video. It's a book full of pages. I can see them. She's riffling through them on the video right now.
And there's my name on the spine.
Sweet, right above Entrepreneur Press.
And look, like my mug is on the back of a book. I don't know when that happened, but I'm like, hello, self, how are you?
That is awesome. So tell us about this book. This was a lot of work. I know you were working on this quite a bit. You took yourself on a vacation to work on this book. I remember that, or a cruise or something. You know, I was there way, way, way far in the background watching you do this. But I watched the process and now it's a reality. So tell us about the book and you know, who's it for? What should we do to, what can we expect when we apply the principles of your dynamic communication skills?
Well, I mean, the first thing you need to do is go out and buy at least 20 copies right away. I mean, at least, right?
And that comes with a glass of wine, I'm guessing?
Dude, you buy 20 copies next time you're in New York, I will take you out for a cocktail, whoever you are out there, you know, that's an enticing, this is my new dating strategy, I think. No, it's buy 20 books first. But no, so this book, it's, so what's funny about it, if I can have a minute to tell the backstory that Nick, you just hinted at, in October of 2015, I took myself on a cruise. You're like, you spoiled. Listen, for me, I know that I am the most creative when I get completely out of my element and put myself in a situation where I am relaxed. So what I did was I said, I'm booking a cruise. I booked a 7-day cruise that went from New York to San Juan, Puerto Rico, and stopped in a couple places in between. And the majority of the days were at sea. So for me, cruise ships, one, pretty safe. Everything's planned for it. You don't have to think about anything, which is crucial for me because I needed all my brain power for this. So I used that cruise and I said, this will have been a success for me if I get off of this boat and I have a book proposal done.
Now, let me ask you a question real quick because I don't really know how the whole thing works, not being a traditionally published author myself. So you already had did you already have something in place with Entrepreneur at this point, or were you just writing a book and going to go out and pitch it?
Yeah. So if you want to get into a major publishing house, meaning a house with distribution at major channels, et cetera, the first step is a proposal. Some people, the first step is an agent. For me, one of the things that my then editor had asked me is, we can start you on a column and everything right away. You'll be a contributor. But what I ask is when you're ready to do your next book, you at least let us look at it, which was the coolest thing. And he's giving the toast at the book party. It's just like this beautiful full circle thing. Like I'm about to cry thinking about that. It's so cool. Okay. Sappy moment over, back to reality here is that I said, okay, what is this book? So I took myself on a cruise and I mapped out this proposal, ended up being about 40, 45 pages because in order to be picked up by a major press, and Entrepreneur Press isn't a huge press, but its name carries credibility. So any traditional press, any profit oriented press, you need to, in a book proposal, at least identify at the bare minimum a marketing plan, how you're going to sell 10,000 copies of a book within a year. That's no small feat. Like that's a lot of books to sell. So I spent most of that cruise, not even writing the idea for the book, but really proving the marketing plan. And then I presented the concept. Well, it wasn't until April of 16. So that's like 6 months later that they made me an offer. June of 16 was when it finally got negotiated to the point where I'm like, okay, this is the advance, this is the package, this is whatever, this is what we're doing. Okay, now let's go. Well, then it was October 1, the due date for the book. So you're looking at mid-June. So that's July, August, September, 3.5 months to get the whole manuscript done. Well, by then,
I thought you were working on it way earlier than that. That's crazy.
No, not at all. Because if no one was going to pick it up, I wasn't going to write it. I had 2 chapters written that you include in the proposal, but that's it. So you have the whole thing outlined, 2 chapters written. So she, my editor said, okay, it was mid-June when we got it on ink, you know, the official contract. July 1st was my first next chapter due just to make sure style was right. Sent it in. She said, yeah, you know, it's good. It's good. I'm following it. Just a caution, you and I both have the tendency to be a little too academic. So while you've done a good job with this chapter, you need to keep that in mind. And I sat with that for a couple weeks. So now it's like July 20th. And I said, I am not feeling this book anymore at all. What can I do to better serve the readership? And this was a key question that I screwed up on from the beginning. My marketing plan was decent, but my idea of what the book would be was not. I was too attached to my own methodology and what I was proud of having invented and created and my own IP and blah, 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 stuff that, you know, as entrepreneurs, we fall in love with our ideas, but our ideas are not necessarily what the audience needs or wants to hear at any given time. So I called my editor July 20th, 2016. Yeah, October 1st, 2016, when this book is due. And I said, I have a better idea for a book and I just want to throw everything away and start from scratch. And she said, are you insane? And I said, yes, but let me tell you about the idea. And I said, I want to have a book where it's just 27. I said 20 something. I didn't know the number then. I said 20 something different strategies and each one can stand alone so that people, no one reads a whole book anymore, so that people can pick up a book, read 10 pages and are like, dang, I just got value from that. I'm putting this back on my shelf and I'll revisit it later if I need it. Right. Mm-hmm. And she goes, oh my God, I love it. I said, then it's not just one area of communication and sales. It's public speaking. It's sales. It's communication foundations. It's how to run meetings. It's how to be a better manager, how to create cultures of innovation, how to retain employees. It's communication across all these spectrums. I said, it's kind of like a whole university degree of communication in a single book that people actually want to read. She goes, I love it. Got to get it done by October 1st. This is July 20th. So you can imagine what's going through my head. So very long story short, a month before it's due, I decided to have the great idea. Now, the smart thing to do would be to do it the reverse way around. But I said, wait, I have this book pretty much, you know, outlined and not completely written, but outlined and set. What if I bring 27 other people into it too and get their opinions? And my editor goes, you're insane, but if you do it by this date, you know, that's all I need. So it was the worst period of my life. I put on weight like I was pregnant. I craved Butterfingers and Dr. Pepper and Indian food, and I ate and got fat, and it didn't matter because by October of last year, I had this manuscript having interviewed 27 for half an hour each entrepreneurs that I distilled into small videos, distilled into interviews in this book. And now it's this thing where there's 8 different segments of business, and you can say whatever problem your business is facing, whether you're a brand new entrepreneur, you've been at it for a while, you have a big company, you're in management. You know what? I am right now struggling with virtual teams. Well, there happens to be a strategy for that. I'm struggling with feedback right now. I'm struggling with being persuasive. I'm struggling with getting buy-in. I'm struggling with creating video, whatever it is. There's a chapter for that. And it's kind of like a resource guide instead of a book where every chapter can stand alone. And I'm freaking proud of it.
That's awesome. Well, you should be. That's fantastic. I'm super excited. I can't wait to get my hands on a copy myself, which I don't have. Hint, hint. But
well, I can't legally send them yet.
I know, but you could just hold it up to the screen like you did, just really slower, much slower. There, just turn to page one now. All right, so here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna take a break. When we come back, I want to find out from you what should we be doing right now. What's the thing that all the businesses that you see could improve their communication skills? Like, what's the thing that we're all failing at? Let us know that. And also, I'm going to find out what your profit abilities are. So those are always exciting to hear. When we get back with Jill Schiffelbein in just a moment. Hey everyone, Nick Knight here. I hope you're enjoying the Profitability Show. I'm having a blast talking business with these amazing guests. Now, as you know, every business needs a profitability, and this show is no exception, because the profitability that I need
is your ratings, your reviews, and your subscriptions. So if you can, pull out your phone, go to iTunes right now or in your podcast app and select The Profitability Show, give it a rating, give it a review, and subscribe to the show. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to do that, and I will return the favor with more great shows.
And we're back with Jill Schiffelbein, who has just completed an amazing book called Dynamic Communications, and we're all excited to see what's inside. But since it's not out yet, and since we haven't had the chance to read it, I wanted to ask you, Jill, what's the thing that you see in the business community that you say, God, I wish I could just tell everybody to do this thing. It would massively improve your business or your outreach or whatever that is. There must be something that you can give us that we can start doing tomorrow before the book comes out. What would that be?
Answer questions, period. End of statement. I'll give you some context, but it's that simple. Answer questions. Whether you're trying to sell, whether you're trying to motivate, whether you're trying to lead, whether you're trying to persuade. And here is where most of us, if not at one point, in multiple points in time during a day, self included, it's something I check myself on all the time, is we are proactively pushing out information and pushing out answers that we believe people need to know. Here's the deal. You're pushing things out that you believe people need to know, but they're not ready to hear it. It's going to fall on deaf ears. In the environment we are in now, the best way to be of service, no matter what you are trying to do in business, with your employees, with your shareholders, with your potential consumers, existing consumers, answer questions. Ask, what questions do you have? Don't just go into a presentation, into a meeting, assuming that you already know that, because more likely than not, you're going to be wrong on at least part of it, because everyone comes to the table with a different amount of information. I tell people that, especially in sales talks that I give, for example, I talk about the changing face of sales in an information economy, because we have access to more information now than ever before, especially if we live in the US or any other, you know, developed nation. You have access to more information than ever before. But there's a big gap between information and knowledge. And whereas the roles of sales teams used to be to provide information to consumers, the consumer can get all of that information before ever having a conversation with you. Mm-hmm. So your goal in sales, your goal is to find the information to knowledge gap, fill that gap, and that will give you a customer. Because otherwise, you're just putting out and answering what you think people need, which is generally around information, and not sitting back and letting them ask, and then you answer the question. I'm not saying not to be proactive about a lot of things. I'm talking about being proactive in reaching out, proactive in starting conversations, proactive in anticipating problems. But again, letting the consumer, letting your employee, letting your manager, letting whomever it is that you're communicating with, bring that question to you so you know exactly how to address it, and don't assume that you know what that question is.
I love it. That's fantastic. Well, I think that that's really great advice. I think it plays off of the old chestnut of how to be a great communicator. Step one, be a great listener. And I think going in and listening to the conversations in your market to find out what are those questions. I mean, in some cases, obviously, you can just ask them, what questions can we help you with? But in other cases, I think paying attention, you can find those questions. And then I love the idea that, yeah, your job is to answer those questions. And I'm guessing, much like you did with your YouTube videos, that, you know, having a strategy in place where you can make those answers readily available for them at their fingertips is probably going to pay off.
You know, it is. And it's the other thing is, even internally. So let's say you're a manager and you're trying to improve the performance of people on your team. Going into that conversation, a feedback conversation, if you will, or whatever you want to call it, the best thing you can do is not push information. The best thing you can do is see what questions your employee has. Now, sometimes you need to prod it along, and I understand that. But instead of pushing information or pushing a solution, say, all right, Nick, here are the facts of this situation. How do you view what's happening? Or what questions do you have about the situation? Or you can even proactively ask the question and then listen for the other questions, which is, here are the facts of the situation. What resources do you need to change these numbers, for example, and then see what comes back. Because sometimes it may be as simple as I had a simple life change at home and my significant other and I are sharing a car now, and it's changing the way I do about business and sales calls on whatever day. That's a very, very simple fix. But if you go in thinking your sales numbers are low, we need to address this. No, we just need to shift your shift schedule a little bit and all the problems would be solved. But we see people have the tendency to do that. You see data, you see numbers, you make assumptions. Mm-hmm. The challenge is listening is important. Asking the right questions is more important. And then answering only the questions that you are asked. Again, if there's information that's left on the table, that's what you can do to prod. But think of it this way. You are more likely to change your behavior based on my feedback if you ask me a question. Mm-hmm. Even if I've probed you and pushed you to ask that question, maybe in a bit of incipient way. If Nick, you say, you know what, Jill, I really do want to know a way to do this more effectively. What do you got? That's when I come in and provide that value, not proactively. It's just like giving feedback unsolicitedly. People aren't going to listen to it in the same way they are if they ask for it first.
That's great. Well, that's great advice and something that we can actually apply. So thank you for that. So this is the part of the show I always enjoy. This is whether I'm talking to, as in past episodes, I've talked to professional puppeteers, jugglers, marketing experts, rock stars, you name it. We've talked to them because we're all in business. That's the one thing we all have in common. We're all in business. We all have to get the next lead. We all have to end up with a paycheck. And I think it's very interesting to find out from people, you know, in every job that I've come across, there's always those things, what I call profit abilities. There's those things that we can do that we know if I would just get off my butt and do more of this, it'll actually turn into money in the bank. Now, usually those are pretty painful things. That's why we don't do more of those things, but sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're things we enjoy. But we've heard everything from, you know, pick up the phone and make, you know, one phone call every day, you know, to generate leads. We've heard a lot of different kind of advice in that area. So I want to ask you, because you have a very interesting business as well, you know, and you run the business of Jill Schiffelbein, of the Dynamic Communicator. You know, apart from all the advice you give, you are in business. You have to figure out how to get new leads. You have to figure out how to get the next pair of eyeballs on your stuff. So is there something that you say to yourself, I got to make time for this because when I do that, it puts dollars in the bank? What are your profitabilities?
Can I give you three really quick ones?
I would love three.
Three. So number one is one that I've already said, which is don't just invest your time, but invest your time and money in something. And you need to do that only in the ideas that you truly believe in, because when you're investing both of those resources, you are going to follow through and be consistent more than ever. It took me 3 years for that consistency to pay off. But now that it has, I'm thinking, oh my God, how many times have I dropped the ball on something that could have led to something by now if I would have just stuck with it? So that's number one.
So you're saying put some skin in the game.
Put the skin in the game and then follow it through, because it can take everyone I've heard of that has a true success story with anything that is based on any online content, whether it's video, social media, et cetera. It's a 2 to 3 year payout. Mm-hmm. There's no get rich quick scheme in that. And people think there is because people sell them on that. There's not. It's a bunch of BS. So put skin in the game and be consistent. That's number one. Number two is stop ignoring your past customers. And this is something I have to smack myself over the head a lot, because the easiest upsells you have are when you've already served someone and served them well. Not reaching out and reintroducing them to a new product or service is a disservice to you, and it's a disservice to them if you know that that product or service can help them. And we always think, oh, this is a new product, a new service, I need a new marketing campaign. Your number one stop should be your existing clients or your past clients.
Love it.
I think that's so incredibly important. And then the third is repurpose the heck out of things and see how you can upsell on your existing service. Example here, I do training a lot of the time. So let's say a company brings me in for a full day custom training session, whatever. And for sake of math, let's say I'm charging 10 grand for that. So 10 grand, you bring me in for a day. Well, here's the wording I use on it, and you can adapt this to your industry. Any training is just putting a Band-Aid on the problem. So for example, if you're a musician listening in, so any performance is an isolated experience. But what if you could take a piece of me home? Like, what if you could give that to your audience? For me, it's, so you're slapping putting a Band-Aid on the problem, at some point it's going to hit the fan and that Band-Aid's going to get wet. So how do you know your employees are prepared to implement the strategies that we spent a day teaching them? The answer for me is what I call drip training, where I give you a video and a question once a week that you incorporate in your weekly meetings so that you're constantly reinforcing the investment that you made in the training with your staff. So what can you do? That's my magic profitability, and I can upsell that for 50% of my original training most of the time, simply because one, I truly believe in it. Two, I know from a learning perspective, it's more effective. And three, people don't like experiences, especially when they are positive, in any industry to end in isolation. Mm-hmm. They want a way to continue more. That's why, even for example, Nick, when you have a good podcast guest, and I'm not saying this is a, oh, we're going to talk about me next, but when you have a good podcast guest and someone's listening, they want a way to expand that experience if they really connected. Different guests connect with different people.
Sure.
So always think of what you're doing and how you can enhance the experience on whatever product or service you have, because I guarantee you there's a way. You just may have to be a little creative in thinking about it.
I love it. That's fantastic stuff. Thank you for that. Well, let's find out from Jill what's coming up next, because she's a very busy girl. I see her all the time in our groups. I'm working on this. I'm doing that. I don't even know. It's all just a blur now. It's been going so fast. So you've got a new book coming out in a couple of weeks. Is there a book tour involved? Are you doing more videos for Entrepreneur? Is there any other secret thing that you haven't told anybody else that you want to divulge here on the Profitability Show?
Ooh, well, for people who want information about the book, dynamiccommunicationbook.com is where you can follow along all of it. And there's not, let's say, an official organized tour, but there are going to be stops. I guess I could call it a tour. That makes me sound more fancy, right? Like, yes, I have a book tour. Would you like to see my engagement list? You know, I feel fancy saying that. But the real reality is, any city that I'm in for a client, I'm also going to either a bookstore, a local university, an entrepreneur, a marketing, a chamber of commerce, some other organization, and partnering with them to share the book, to share messages, to help people and serve people across the country. So if you want that in your city and you have an organization that can sponsor it, by all means, tell me and I'll get on a plane and come. But it's exciting to see for me what momentum this will create and the potential I think it has to create. And the next biggest thing for me is launching an online community that goes along with it. So it's people, you know, maybe they bought the book, maybe they didn't, but every single Monday they want to wake up and start their week with an actionable strategy and a step-by-step process that's going to make them more impactful as a business owner every week. And so I actually will roll that out after the book gets out. And you can find information about that at dynamicaccelerator.com.
Oh, that's the secret dynamic accelerator one. I've heard about that, but I didn't know what it was. Now I know. That's fantastic. Well, this is great. So I'm going to put all the links on the show page of this episode. But for those of us who are driving in our car or jogging along and we just can't stand it, and as soon as we push the pause button, we're going to, on our mobile phone, send you an email or a Twitter, a tweet, I should say, or something. What are some of the ways we can get a hold of you?
I am everywhere on social at Dynamic Jill. My last name is Schiffelbein, and it's a pain in the butt to spell. So just at Dynamic Jill everywhere. And you can find me, links to the websites, email, everything at that. But just Dynamic Jill, remember that.
Fantastic. That'll do. Well, Jill, thank you so much for being on the show. It's so great to have you here. Finally, we waited to do this interview until we knew this book was going to be launching. And I said, let's time it out. But it was a long wait waiting for you to get on the show. So I'm really happy you finally got on here. And I want to have you back, obviously. Maybe we'll come back and we'll talk about what you're doing with your book and how you're marketing that or how you're getting it out, something down the road. So we look forward to hearing from you again.
Thank you so much for having me, Nick. And thank you everyone who listened and stuck with it this long. I look forward to hearing what your favorite takeaway was.
All right. Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you'd like to learn more profitabilities, go to profitabilityshow.com for episodes, show notes, and more. And be sure to click the subscribe button to get the latest episodes delivered straight to your favorite device.